and welcome back to Galvanize. I am excited to introduce you to season 3 of the podcast. We have an amazing lineup of some fabulous people who we're chatting with over the coming months. First up, of course, is Ross King. Based in Hollywood, he is the go-to for all things showbiz. He has had such an interesting career, and I really think you guys are going to enjoy this episode. Yeah, it must be crazy timings for you if you're kind of
It's absolutely mad because you've got, so it can be, so from an American time point, I can be on Good Morning Britain from 10 o'clock here. Mm-hmm. Then Lorraine comes on at 1 o'clock. And then I don't finish Lorraine until 2 o'clock. Then if I'm doing Australian TV, sometimes I can do that straight after. Sometimes they'll want it at 5 o'clock. So you've got that really weird little period where you're either thinking, do I just go to bed and get an hour of sleep and get up? Or do I just keep going or power through it? And then also you can be filming the next day and you can be up really early or...
Exactly, because I was going to say, does that make you night shift? But if you've got stuff kind of happening throughout the day, it's kind of just really whenever you can grab a nap.
That's it. It's like all shift.
Yeah, exactly.
New expression, I'm all shift. But yeah, it's fun though. But you know, there's that old expression, if you enjoy what you do, you know, you never feel like you've worked a day in your life. And that genuinely is how I feel. It's fun.
Living
the dream, exactly. It's all fun.
Absolutely. Well, before we get stuck in deeper into what you are up to at the moment, I'd like to rewind a little bit
just rewind for you there. There we are.
Is this something you've always wanted to do? As a little kid, were you thinking, TV presenter, now that is where I can see myself?
No, I'll tell you, so it's a kind of weirdish way that it all happened. But so as a kid, my mum and dad were very musical, and I was always put out as the little kid who kind of sang and, you know, did jokes and impressions at parties and at different events. And so that was kind of the introduction to it all. But of course, you just don't ever think about doing it professionally. And even though, you know, there was a TV show, I think my mum and I did a little bit on a show for STV when I think I was about 5 or something like that. And I just remember I was filming a thing. It might have even been for school's TV or something. I remember just seeing the cameras and thinking, oh, this is fun. But of course, you never think about that. Then I was going to be a footballer, and I was okay. I was going to go to Partick Thistle or Partick Thistle Nil, to give them the full title, as Billy Connolly always said. Rangers 3, Partick Thistle Nil, Celtic 4, Partick Thistle Nil. And so as a schoolboy, so that all made sense. And it made sense to my family as well, because it was like I was okay at football. I could be a PE teacher as well. So that was the idea. I'll do both those things. Very sporty, played every single sport there was, played sports every single day. But still loved the fun side of performing. And then the weirdest thing was that when I was at school and I got to, I think it was probably about 15, 16, I actually thought, do you know what? I really like this showbiz lark. And my dad, I always remember him just saying to me, son, we don't know Coco the Clown. We're happy to help you, but we don't know Coco the Clown. So how do you get into show business? Mm-hmm. And then it was so lucky. I was performing at school, and we did we do the school discos and things like that. And then my maths teacher, Roddy Hood, said to me, look, if you really are serious about getting into broadcasting and TV and all the rest of it, hospital radio is a great way to go. And Mrs. Lawson, who's another maths teacher, her son, Alan Lawson, works at the BBC now, but he's still involved in hospital radio. And that was it. So I went there. And then it was really funny because as a kid, I went into the studios and I'd never ever thought about being a DJ or anything like that. And then they would play the record before CDs, so and you know the introduction, and back then it was very much the thing that you talked over the introduction to the song and hit the vocals. And because of my musical background, that a lot of DJs would time, you know, oh, it's an 18 second intro. And I would just go, no, that's three bars or whatever. And I was so used to, as a kid, getting up and singing with bands at wedding and things. I just knew the introductions and I knew that the vocals would come in. So they thought, oh, this is quite funny. So they would bring people into the studio and say, look, watch this kid. He can do an introduction to any song because he just knows when it starts. So that was it. So I then got my own little show on hospital radio. And then I heard that another way into the business was through Radio Clyde. If you were the Saturday boy, it was called, and you were the Saturday boy, you did everything. You were the studio factotum. You made the tea, the coffee, you photocopied the scripts, everything. You did absolutely everything. You went to the football grounds and you rigged threw the cables over and set it all up. I mean, you did everything. And I got that job. Paul Cooney was just a great mentor to me. And he employed me when I probably just turned 16, and I was a Saturday boy. I got £10 on a Saturday. I've never been so well paid, still haven't been. And that was it. And that got me into Radio Clyde. And then I was lucky that I came through at a time when, you know, I think a lot of people were getting a bit older or whatever. And I was like this young kid with a kind of longish blondish hair. And it was like, just get them out and do the road shows and things. And that was what happened. And then I got my own show. And then through that, I got TV. And then I kind of was in that place where I had really wanted to go to drama school in Glasgow as well. But because of the opportunities I was getting by being a DJ or being in the TV, it never, ever happened. So so that was how I got started.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's so interesting. It's kind of just one. It almost sounds unintentional, like things just kind of flowed and happened in such a nice way for you. And it's amazing that you started with radio as well, something that was kind of maybe more comfortable because you had a bit of a music background. But when was it you had your first presenting gig?
So I think I was, again, I was really young. I think I was about 18 or 19. So I've been doing the radio for a bit, and then there was a show came up on BBC Scotland called CTV1. And basically what happened during the summer, they would take over the morning slot for about 3-4 weeks. And they wanted a show to fill it in. And because I had broken through as Ross the Boss, was my nickname on the radio, they thought, oh, we'll get this kid in. And again, it was a similar thing where I just loved it. I'd always wanted to do TV. And to combine both of them. And it was very funny because also back in those days, so the show was live every morning. So that was another great part from my radio background and a bit of my acting background and the improv as well. That all helped. But it was funny. Nowadays, if you were doing a TV show just now and you said, right, let's now go and look at that clip of, you know, me back then, they would just roll it and it would happen instantly. The instant starts now. But back then you had like it was called a 10 second roll. So you had to give them 10 seconds for the video to get up to speed. So you'd have to go, so yeah, let's go back and look at that now. And chat for 10 seconds until it came on. But of course for me, that was exactly like talking over the start of a record.
Exactly.
So again, that was another thing where I was like, wow, this is fun. And then having to hit that, you know, exactly on the second. I love that as well. So again, live TV it was amazing that the first TV I did was live.
Mm-hmm. Thrown into the deep end, really.
That was it. And also what was funny was that at that time as well, because it was still, and I think most people, because you're a kid, you want to be a footballer or a pop star or whatever. And I think there was a little bit of me that because of the singing, I still hankered after a little bit about, you know, being a pop star. And what had happened was I was watching the music awards, and I remember it was Noel Edmonds, who's a great TV host. He was hosting the our version of the Grammys or whatever, some big music awards. And then the next year, all these people that had been so popular the year before were now nowhere to be seen, but Noel Edmonds was still presenting the awards. And I thought, maybe it's better to be Noel.
More longevity.
Than to be Adamant or something like that at the time. Uh-huh. So that was kind of really how that came about as well. So I thought, I'm going to stick at this and maybe I got a chance to do you know, go back to doing singing, which I did, to do West End musicals and, you know, silliness like that. So yeah, just so lucky though. I mean, you'll hear me say the word lucky a lot, and I really do mean it, you know. And I, you know, my friends joke with me when I'm always saying I'm too blessed to be stressed, but it's so true. You know, that's my motto is that. And I do understand how lucky I am. And Gary Player, who was an old golfer, you know, he always said the luckier, the more I practice, the luckier I get. And I think that's such a true thing, you know, that, you know, the more you try, the more you practice, the more you're tenacious. You know, whenever I'm giving advice to people, I always say, be tenacious. Tenacity is such a great word. And the more tenacious you are, the more things will happen for you. So that's how I've always felt, you know, that, you know, my niece Holly is now working in television and radio. And, you know, I would say to her, just be that kid who smiles all the time, who always says, you know, don't give me problems, give me solutions, you know, and do everything and learn everyone's jobs so that at the end of the day, you know exactly what is happening, why it's not happening, and you can fix things. And, you know, that's it. And even, you know, having covered the Oscars again for the umpteenth year, you know, we had problems at the beginning, technical problems, but because of my background in radio and working and doing the football grounds, I was immediately able to go, right, no, disconnect that, give me that, no, let me plug that in here, no, and take that out and plug that in through there. And it's funny that sometimes, like, the technical guys are going, how did you know to do that? And I go, because when I was 15, 16, I was involved with all these things. So it's helpful.
I totally get that. And I really appreciate what you're saying about trying different roles and almost like casting your net wider through radio on stage, on screen. And just out of curiosity, is there anything that's been particularly scary? What was the most kind of thing that made you think, oh dear, this is a little bit out of my comfort zone?
two things I can definitely think of. One was playing Frankenfurter in the Rocky Horror Show on stage. And I took over from Jason Donovan. And funnily enough, I came to Edinburgh to see Jason do it. And my friend, funnily enough, Paul Cooney, who the man who'd given me my job in radio, and we were watching the show. And of course, most of the audience is all dressed up. If anyone's ever been to see the Rocky Horror Show, people go mad, they scream, they shout, and they all get dressed up. And there's a very weird and wonderful atmosphere. And when I was watching it, I remember Paul turning to me and saying, are you really going to do this? Are you going to be able to do this? I remember thinking, I don't know, but I know that in, you know, 5 weeks' time, I will be on stage and I'm going to have to try and do it. So that was really weird. And also because the audience get to shout out. So it's almost like doing stand-up and being heckled constantly, and you have to hit them back. So that was one. And then weirdly enough, doing stand-up, I played the Laugh Factory here on Sunset Boulevard. And again, that was because I'm used to hosting things. Yeah, and normally when you're hosting things, you think, okay, you go out, you do a few gags, but equally normally you can control the timing. So you think, I'll do a couple of gags, and if they've gone well, I'll do a couple more. And if it hasn't gone well, you can go, okay, but now will you welcome, please, you know, here's Gary Barlow. So it's all right like that. But when you're doing the Laugh Factory, when I did it as well, I had a 50-minute spot. So you have to keep going till the red light comes on, and then that's your time. So that was definitely, you know, I realized, wow, I'm out of my comfort zone. And I take my hat off to, you know, stand-ups who do sets that are like an hour and 2 hours and things. You know, it's phenomenal. So that was, you know, when I could certainly feel my heart go ba-dum, 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 ba-dum. But again, I was just so lucky to get to do so many different things.
Yeah.
And I think there was a great chat show host out here, Johnny Carson. And he said, you know, every joke that you've ever heard or every skill you've ever learned, you will use it at some point. And I think that, again, is great advice that, you know, if someone gives you a chance to ride a unicycle or learn how to ride, do it, because at some point you'll be hosting a show and it will be from a circus and someone will say, I don't suppose you can ride a unicycle or some, you know, there's always something that comes up and you're like, oh yeah. So again, it's just that wonderful experience and gathering it all, keeping it together, keeping it in your head. And, you know, sure enough, there you go.
Yeah, and I think half of it is just kind of like you say, and how you approach things is just be fearless, because the worst that's going to happen is someone doesn't laugh at your joke or you may get heckled. And at the time, it can feel like the end of the world, but it's only going to make you richer in terms of your experience and prospective opportunities as well. Totally agree. Right,
yeah, you just, you learn from it all, and you learn that, and then also you learn to make the best out of a bad situation. Mm-hmm. So again, if you are on stage and a gag doesn't go well, then you learn to say, you know, anything like, you know, I wasn't born here tonight, but I've got a feeling I'm going to die here.
Exactly. So
you get your way out of it. And it is funny, as you say, with comedy. And also, of late, I've been doing some of the cruise ships as well. And it's wonderful, you know, doing the Queen Mary II, and it's just beautiful. But it's funny that if you sing a song, the audience are conditioned, as the song finishes, to applaud. It's how we work. But if you tell a joke and it's not funny, or people don't find it funny, they just don't laugh. It's a really weird thing. So sometimes it's safer to sing than to do it. But then for me, sometimes my singing is funnier than my jokes. So
not as funny as mine, let me tell you that. So at what point did you relocate from the UK to where you are now in LA?
Wow, it's a long time ago now, the year 2000, I moved out here. And it was really strange, because I'd come out here, I think the first time I came here was about 93, 94. I was doing a chat show at the BBC called Pebble Mill. And we'd come out here to cover the Oscars, weirdly enough. And when I got here, I just loved it. There was something about it. And I thought, one point in my life, I want to come here and have a go at working out here. And it was in 1999, going into 2000. Before you were born.
Oh no, don't worry, I was definitely born. Sadly, not that young.
And I was doing a musical at Sadler's Wells in the West End in London, and to be really honest, I was bored. I was actually bored, not with the show. I was enjoying doing the show, but I just realized that I just needed a new challenge.
A bit restless, yeah.
I was a bit restless, and I thought, what do I need to do? And I thought, I need to go to America. Mm-hmm. And that was it. And I came out here, and I didn't have, you know, a couple of agents had seen me in shows in London. They'd all said, oh, if you come out. And I just came out here. You know, I was married to my wife, Charlie, at the time. We had a couple of suitcases, and we came out and just thought, we'll just go for it. And we'll come out for a pilot season, as it used to be, and came out for 2-3 months. And that was it. And then stayed. Yeah. Never, ever went back.
So was it you kind of caught the bug when you were over there, or was it you were lucky enough to land a job within the first 2 months?
I was lucky that I got a couple of little films right away. I came out at a time when all the baddies in movies were all Brits or European. So yeah, they quite liked that. So the first film I did was, I was the bad guy who you thought was the good guy. So I managed to pick up some stuff like that right away. And then I started doing some stuff for some of the TV back in Britain, and some radio as well, because people were like, are you in America? And I was like, yep. Because I obviously, to a couple of my friends, I said, I'm just going to go, but I didn't make any sort of like announcement, I'm leaving Britain, you know, and I'm going to America.
Nothing like on social media now. You
could've... No, exactly. Well, that was it. There was no social media. That's what's so funny. I thought, I'm just going to give it a go. So that was it. Yeah, I just thought, just go and see how I get on. And I was very lucky. I got, as I said, did some movies, you know, small movies and fun movies. A movie with Steven Seagal, where I ended up being in Berlin, being an FBI agent.
Fabulous.
And then KTLA, big station here in Los Angeles, I joined them, and initially was, again, that weird thing. I was doing the weather for them. How a Scotsman ended up doing the weather in Los Angeles is just
not
crazy.
Used to all the sunshine, you would have had to report.
That was it. Well, my first ever weather report was, you live in Southern California, it's sunny, it's hot, get used to it, get over it. And then I just got to put on the map, that's all, folks. And that was my first ever weather report. It's just crazy. And then they knew about my background, so then I became the entertainment anchor as well, and did that for 6 years. So it was amazing. And again, that's it. I've just managed to keep doing different things and ducking and diving and staying under the radar.
Well, you've honestly done some of the most interesting things in the world, in my opinion, and you've also met some of the most amazing and talented people in the world, which obviously brings me to the Oscars, which you were lucky enough to be there the other night. How was that?
It was absolutely surreal, especially obviously as most people now know what happened with Will Smith and Chris Rock. I mean, it was like, you know, starstruck at the Oscars, except there was a star who was struck, you know, the biggest hit of the night, Will Smith hitting Chris Rock. It was bizarre. I mean, everyone was completely taken aback. You know, in the room, everything went quiet. People felt a little bit unsafe. It was just bizarre. And it's just not what you expect at the Oscars, and it's not what you hope will happen at the Oscars. And it's such a shame because it takes away a bit, I think, you know, the attention from Coda, which I thought was the most lovely movie. And Emilia Jones, who was sensational in the lead role, and who's Alla Jones' daughter, that people will know from TV and singing. And I'm so pleased for him and for the family. And Emilia was just brilliant. Yeah. So I feel that it took away from them and Jessica Chastain winning. But again, what a surprise in Hollywood, someone making it all about them, me.
But that's so interesting that you talk about that, because my question to you, as someone who's so experienced in the industry, and you're used to obviously reporting on the glitz and glamour of Hollywood, how do you deal with kind of the controversy and something like that?
I think my way of dealing with things is you want to be as honest as you can be. And I always feel that my job is to pull back the curtain on Hollywood a little bit and to hopefully give people an insight. I sometimes think that people don't want you to pull the curtain all the way back, because
leave a little bit of the magic.
Exactly. It's a little bit ugly at times here. And that's not what really I think everyone really wants. But I think to pull it back a little bit and to give an insight into what really is going on, I feel that that's part of my job. And to be, you know, I think, you know, we've got a Scottish sort of honesty that we bring to things, and you know, a bit straightforward at times, and I think that helps. But also to be as excited, and I'm every bit as excited when I go to cover the Oscars, the Vanity Fair party, to go into a film studio here, to meet people that sometimes I've never met before. I love it. I genuinely get excited. You know, I'm lucky that I live right underneath the Hollywood sign. Every
what
day
I see,
no, I see the Hollywood sign every day. I smile. I never get used to that. So yeah, I think it's bringing the enthusiasm, but hopefully bringing a bit of knowledge as well that maybe will help people understand things a bit more, or maybe just give them a different insight into it. You know, can be like, you know, as publicists say, you know, you get two C-listers and you put them together and you can make them A-listers because it's two C-listers. You know, it's a weird thing like that. Sometimes just giving people a little bit of an insight, or, you know, sometimes saying, this isn't real, or, you know, that photograph you saw that supposedly was snapped by a paparazzo, actually the paparazzo was employed by the star to take that photograph, to sell that photograph, you know. So sometimes it's quite interesting, and for me as well, I love, you know, finding out the truth behind it all. And
yeah, a little bit of detective work as well.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's so fantastic. And you obviously, as you mentioned, went to the Vanity Fair party. And just as someone who's really interested and loves movies, what for you had the most buzz around it? What movie was kind of the talk of the night?
Well, it's funny that, so again, as I mentioned, Emilia Jones starring in Coda. I love Coda. And it was like the little movie that could, you know, it was a real outsider. Some people hadn't, you know, seen it. And going back to when I watched it, I went, this is really good. And for me, it's my favorite of all the movies. And then as it was going along, it was beginning to pick up momentum. I think because it was such a heartwarming story, and we all want something like that at the moment. Mm-hmm. And then I was speaking with Alad, and I said, I think this has got a real chance. He was like, it's never going to win. It's never going to win. And I said, you know what? I feel the momentum growing. And it's funny as well, into the final couple of weeks just before the Oscars. And I was texting back and forth going, look, here's another article. Here's, you know, it's building, it's building, it's building. And I just had that feeling. And when I was on Lorraine's show, when I was given my predictions, not that I was that clever, but I chose all the five categories, best actor, best actress, supporting actor and actress, and movie. And I got them all right. It wasn't because I was particularly clever. It's just,
but you know the industry. Kind of,
you know the industry. And I got that feeling in this time where the buzz was going. That, you know, there was, I really thought this is going to happen. And thankfully it did, because it was beautiful. It's such a beautiful movie. My Aunt Betty was deaf. And so I've always had an affinity with people with a, you know, hearing impairment. And when I see people signing, I just love it. And when I've done theatre shows, when you've had a signer at the side, I just love it. There's just, I don't know, I've just felt a real connection with it. And to interview the, you know, Troy Kotsur, who won Best Supporting Actor, and making history, it was just wonderful. It's just so expressive. And you know, I find it very emotional. And I, you know, I know for him, you know, it's life changing for him. And hopefully as well that, you know, it'll make people much more aware, and there'll be roles for people, you know, with the hearing impairments in movies more and more. So it was just, it was a wonderful, that was, for me, that was just the best part of the night.
Yeah, of course. And it's enough to kind of be awarded an Oscar, but for that movie to actually change the way people perceive certain things or topics or, like you say, hearing impairment, it's such a special thing that can come out of something that's already fantastic.
Yeah,
I'm really thrilled for on my watch list. I need to watch it. So just out of curiosity, when you go to something like the Oscars or the Vanity Fair party, do you have a brief, you know, by the person who or company who's employing you to kind of report? Are they like, you must talk to X, Y, and Z, or is it a bit of a free-for-all?
That's the great thing on the Oscars night. It becomes the biggest free-for-all that you've ever seen. And you have no idea who's coming along, because when it gets to, especially the Vanity Fair party, you don't know who's coming. You know, you can look at the list of invites, but again, you never know who's coming. Also, what is quite funny is that if you're not invited to the Vanity Fair party, but you win an Oscar, that gets you into the Vanity Fair party.
Okay.
So you just turn up holding your Oscar.
You're like, this is my invite.
this is my invite. That's it. It's the funniest thing. So you have no idea. And so what I try to do as well is, if people have seen me do it in television, I try to, if you look at me in television, I'm looking to my right. And the reason I'm looking to my right is that I'm interviewing someone, but also trying to keep a little eye on who's coming along behind them, because you don't want to miss people too. And that's what I love about it. I mean, you have no idea, because even at the party, so one minute I'm interviewing Joan Collins, and then next minute you know Troy Kotsur is coming along with his Oscar, and then next minute Donatella Versace, you know, you're like, okay, wow, it's, you know, it's that weird and wonderful. You're like, oh my goodness me, how did that happen? And how did that person, who's like, 1 year I remember, you know, then suddenly it's Kylie Minogue. And you're thinking, Hailey, I didn't expect you to be here, you know. So that's what I love. And then, you know, you have to either try and remember something that they've been involved with, or sometimes you just ask them a bizarre question about the night. Yeah. And then, of course, obviously, you know, everyone on the studio in Good Morning Britain and Lorraine, obviously the Will Smith, you know, hit was a huge topic. But of course, then you're suddenly getting people like Kevin Costner, and you can understand that they don't really want to get involved too much in the controversy. You know, they want to say, obviously, it's bad to hit anyone, but they don't want to get too involved because, you know, again, at the end of the day, again, pulling back the curtain a little bit, you know, Will Smith is a huge, huge movie star. So, you know, people are thinking, well, what he did was obviously wrong, but I don't want to criticize too much in case, you know, he comes back and says, oh, you said this about me and you're not going to be in a film. And so it's a funny old situation. But again, it's just fun, you know. And I think that's, you've got to, again, when I came out here to LA, I went back to acting class for 3 years, and I went to improv class. And improv is such a great thing to help you sort of be loose.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit like if you're skiing sometimes, and you've got to try, rather than tightening up, you just want to be loose, and you just want your mind to be as sharp, but it's that you want to kind of be very free. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, going back to what you were saying, you know, you can read as many notes as you can, but the chances are you'll never use them. But having said that, it goes back to, again, the more you practice, the luckier you get. So, I mean, I read copious notes on everything. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's interesting. So, say, for example, like there's one note in my head, Benedict Cumberbatch in The Power of the Dog, he stayed in character for the whole movie until the very last shot. I won't give away the ending just in case people are going to watch it, but he stayed in character until that very last shot. And then when he came out of it, people applauded and were cheering because they were there now meeting Benedict rather than the character. Uh-huh. So in my head, I thought, if I see Benedict or I'm chatting to him, I want to bring that up. But of course, Benedict lost, and I did see him at the party and he waved, but I knew that by that time he's talked out, he's done so many interviews. In fact, about 2 or 3 years ago on the red carpet, he came along. We interviewed him so many times, and he just came running over and he went, "Darling," he said, "I'm all talked out now. I'm just going to give you a big kiss and then I'm going to go in and go dancing."
Appreciate the honesty.
Exactly. And, you know, that's what happens a lot of times. When, by the time he gets to that party, they just want to, you know, get in, especially if you've lost. Mm-hmm, especially if you've lost, you don't want to talk about losing.
Exactly. And I can imagine for these kind of Oscar worthy films, the actors and the production team, they all put so much pressure on themselves, maybe more so than if they're shooting something that's a bit more commercial. So they just get to that party and relax.
Exactly. Let the hair down. Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly it. So it's great, but it's fun. You got to just be free, go with the flow, and have fun.
And can I ask you, who was your, in your opinion, the best dressed?
The best dressed? Oh, wow.
There was some phenomenal outfits.
I think everyone really made such an effort because it was like,
first one back, isn't it, as well?
Yeah. Emilia had on this amazing dress. I know that sides were very much a big thing. I'm showing my fashionista side of things. The sides was a big thing. And it's funny, we did a thing about, way back when Cher went to the Oscars for the first time, and Bob Mackie, a legendary fashion designer, made her outfit. It was the one where black, and she had the big headdress and all the rest
of it. I know exactly.
And she had sides, and she showed sides. And, you know, that was what was a big, big trend on the carpet this year. People showing sides, all the cutouts. Mm-hmm. And Emilia's one was just absolutely stunning. But there were a lot of really beautiful outfits. And you know, some of the men went a bit mad as well. What is lovely for me is that I wore a suit that was made by Andrew Brooks, who's based in Edinburgh. And he's my wonderful tailor from there, and always comes up with something, you know, a little bit different. And, you know, he's got like a quirky little touch. He'll make things very classically, but then be a quirky little touch, or he'll have like give me a little tartan pocket square and things like that. Or, you know, there'll be like a little tartan button that you can't quite make out, but you just know it's there. So it's great. I think everyone was really happy to get dressed up and just get out. And I think that showed.
Yeah, everyone showed up in the best way possible. And that was completely evident from someone all the way over in Scotland who was doing this on their phone or on the TV. It was just absolutely magical. So I have kept you a long time. So I want to
That's
ask
all right,
you
my dear.
Two more questions.
As long as you want. Don't worry.
Before you go.
Don't worry.
Who has been the most special person you have ever interviewed? If you had to pick one. It's really kind of almost took your breath away that you've been in their presence.
I'm looking I'm looking up from my computer here, and there's a picture of me and Dolly Parton, and Dolly is everything you want her to be.
Yeah,
you know, she's funny, she's sharp, she's just lovely. And so whenever I'm in her presence, I always feel very, very, you know, too blessed to be stressed, mm-hmm. because she is that woman. And I think when you mention her name, I've never ever mentioned her name to anyone, and anyone going, everyone goes, oh, yeah. Love Dolly Parton. And it's quite interesting, isn't it? There's so few people in this world, uh-huh. especially the way the world is now and so divisive, that people just go, I love Dolly Parton. And I love the fact that she knows how, well, she obviously doesn't know quite how loved she is, but because I think of the fact that she is so loved, she is so lovely and yeah. never ever disappoints. And you know, I feel really lucky to have met her quite a few times and interviewed her many times, and I'm just looking up and I've got a couple of pics of her uh-huh. on the wall here. She's just amazing. So you know, you never ever go wrong. But you know, then the list goes on of people who've been brilliant and great fun with me. You know, George Clooney is always fun, Julia Roberts I love, The Rock, Dwayne The Rock Johnson is just great. And then, you know, to have pals that I interview in the carpet or interview, or just they come around the house, you know, you've got Gerard Butler, Michael Douglas, Catherine Zeta-Jones. So all these people just make my job easy and make it fun. So again, just lucky.
It is so lovely to hear you say that as well, because I think there's sometimes a misconception, I would rightly call it, about some people who work in showbiz that think they're kind of all this and all flashy and almost too good to have a conversation. But absolutely, that's not the case with you. You've had some really great experiences. You've made friends.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, it's funny sometimes when people go, oh, you have showbiz friends. And I'd say, yeah, but say like Gary Barlow or so Gary Barlow, I met before Take That had any hits. Gerry Butler, I met before, you know, his films kicked off. Catherine, I'd known since she was in The Darling Buds of May. So there's, you know, there's quite a few people like that, but it's lovely to have known these people such a long time and before, you know, they went into the stratosphere, like Sam Heughan from Outlander. I met Sam when nobody really had, you know, even knew Outlander. It was this show on some, you know, cable thing, and we're like, what? And I remember meeting him out here and just going, what a lovely guy. And you know, he's been brilliant with me out here. We do a Burns Bash, not a Burns Supper. We make it very much a kind of cool, trendy Burns mm-hmm. Bash, you know. And he's come along with his new whiskey, he's done the address to the haggis, and you know, just brought the house down. So it's lovely to have met these people, you know, again on the way up. And you know, they've just been really lovely. So yeah, again, just feel very lucky to have been involved in it all for as long as I have now. And it's funny when I'm doing chats like this, mm-hmm. that you're suddenly thinking, oh my goodness.
Taking you down memory lane.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, Karen, because you're thinking, oh my goodness me. Yeah, such a long time. And, you know, when I moved here in 2000, it seemed like, wow, you know, the millennium, it's like 2000. And now you go, it's 22 years on.
I know.
Like, where the heck did that time go? So I just feel very lucky to still be here, still working.
And I totally think your success is a testament to you as a person. You obviously have managed to bring a real human side to everything that's all glitz and glam. It's so special to get such a rare insight that you provide. So it's a blessing even chatting to you to kind of get the real scoop on everything. So obviously you are very happy in your own career, which is so rare. Sadly, I wish more people could kind of enjoy what they do day to day as much as you can. What would you give, what would you say to those people that are kind of thinking about maybe taking a leap or going into showbiz or just really going outside their comfort zone? What would you be your piece of advice?
I would say go for it. Mm-hmm. Is the first thing. Excuse me. I would say go for it. Also, my mum gave me the best advice when I was a kid. And I didn't realize it until maybe I was about 21, 22. And she would always say, you know, if I was leaving the house to go and do a play or a gig or even a football match, she would always say, do your best, son. That's all you can do. And I was like, well, of course I'm going to do my best. You know, that way where you think, Mom, what, I'm going to go and play football and not do my best. But then I realized when I got to about 21, 22, all the things you need to do your best. So now that's, again, going back to what we're talking about with the Oscars, you know, I sit, I watch all the shows, I watch all the movies, I watch the short movies, I watch as much as I can, I read everything I can, because I want to be able to do my best. Because at the end of it, especially in this business, and you know what it's like, Karen, is that if you can only do so much. And then sometimes it's up to someone else who says, I want you, I don't want you. And when you're going for a role in a show or a movie or something, it feels so personal. But it's not sometimes, it's just that you're not right for that part. But if you do your best, and by that you've trained, or you're as fit as you can be, or everything, whatever you can do to do your best, then when you do your best, that's it. You can't do anything else. So you can walk away from it and go, well, I did my best. And I think that's a great bit of advice. And it's weird, that's what my mum always said. And then I think, going back to another word I used, being tenacious, you know, that's such a big, big thing. And I think if you want to get into this business, just find out any way and do anything you can, you know, within reason, to get into it. And, you know, just take, you know, for me, it was, you know, taking the Saturday boy job at Radio Clyde was the start. And also, I still feel that same way, that even if we're filming here, I will go and make the teas and the coffees, because it's part of my job still, even though it was my job when I was 16. And I think that that's what you have to do. You just have to be tenacious. And yeah, take a look. Here I am, 5,000 miles away, to quote a famous song. And, you know, if I can get from Knightswood in Glasgow to Hollywood, then, you know, anyone can. And so hopefully, if I've led by example.
You absolutely have.
You know, that's it. So listen, if I can get here, you know, and if that's someone's dream, then, you know, anyone can. That's it. If someone like me can end up here, you can too.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. This one was really special for me. Of course, it goes without saying how amazing and established Ross is. So it was an absolute pleasure to have him on the podcast. So a huge thank you to Ross. And of course, thank you again for sticking with me and listening to this new episode. I really hope you're going to enjoy this season. Please keep up to date with everything on our Instagram, and if you can, recommend this to your friends. See you next time.